I think in the near future, you know, what I see changing as far as the types of cases that we're getting a lot more, as far as novel areas of the law that aren't listed here, we're getting a lot more cases that revolve around social media usage, infringement, and basically what's permissible under different terms of use. We are also just now beginning to look at cases for the brand new Copyright Claims Board, which will be very interesting. It's basic, if you're not familiar with it, it's basically the Copyright Office is basically set up almost like a small claims process where you no longer have to go through the whole rigmarole of filing in federal court to enforce your copyright, which really helps the smaller artist, which is our primary clientele. And as we've moved closer and closer to a more of a gig economy where people are taking non-traditional work as freelancers, this is really going to affect artists because they don't have the backing of a traditional employer to help them enforce their rights before the Copyright Board. So we're starting to look at test cases. So if you hear of one, an example would be the test case we're looking at is an Etsy artist, an artist who sells her wares and someone is selling duplicates on Etsy. She filed a takedown notice. The person who approaches filed a takedown notice. And on Etsy, you can just file a counterclaim regardless if it's valid or not. And the only recourse to that is to file a lawsuit. So previously, you would have to hire an attorney, bring a suit in federal court, which, of course, over, you know, a $50 product isn't necessarily worth it. You know, selling at 100 units per year isn't necessarily worth it. But for the Copyright Claims Board, it might actually be a viable way to fight the counterclaim. Another service, do we have any patent attorneys in here? No? Okay, so another thing that we do is that I wanted to mention is we have a patent pro bono program, which is separate from our arts program. We were appointed by the USPTO to administer the Texas and Louisiana arm of their pro bono project. As the program grew, we gave the Louisiana arm to the Ella project, and now we just do Texas. But if there are any patent attorneys here, we'll just skip what we do for patent pro bono. But it's a really amazing program. And apparently we're one of the biggest producers in the country for patent pro bono, which is it's hard for me to believe because we do maybe like we get awarded maybe one or two patents a year, but given that these things take 6 or 7 years to do, that's apparently a very impressive number to the patent board. So we're very proud of that as well. So these are our member qualifications. Now the numbers look high when you look at traditional legal aid and the demographic they serve. So we can serve up to 300% of federal poverty level. That said, our average client has a household income of around $25,000. And that was not, that's not a number that was brought down by the pandemic. Before the pandemic, the number was actually $22,000. So our average working artist income has actually gone up during the pandemic. So additionally, the people who reported, most of them reported their race for demographic information. 63% of our demographic is people of color, primarily African Americans. So just like with any other pro bono work, there is an equity piece here. You know, this is this has been, through my work with Tela, I have found this to be continuing the same work and bridging a very big equity gap, because the arts are not an easy, there's not an easy entryway to the arts if you're not independently wealthy. And we certainly know that there are many voices that are underrepresented in the arts, and legal services are a very necessary part to bridge that gap. You know, our goal is to have our members eventually work their way out of our income bracket. And just this year, we've had three former members report that they have worked their way out of our income bracket due to our services, which is really amazing. We have one artist who recently signed to a major rap label who was an immigrant, and we got him. We normally don't do immigration, but like I said, we kind of go out of our bounds when called to. We started with helping extend his talent visa, and then we worked on his management contract, and then we eventually worked on his major label contract. And just recently, he asked for a referral for an accountant for hire because he was no longer within our income range due to the contract we helped him negotiate. There is another nonprofit that we assisted. She is an arts journalist, and she just yesterday was awarded a very prestigious journalism award that came with a sizable financial award as well. So we're always proud to hear that. And there's another graphic artist who is working. I think she was doing things that were being used as prop decorations for major studio, like Marvel pictures. And we also got her a contract that put her above our income level. So just this year, we've helped at least three artists become true working artists. And that's why we do what we do. Next slide. We do have membership fees. And these are primarily administrative fees. And then I don't really have much to say about that. They primarily go to pay for our programs, which are also extensive. And these are other ways to volunteer, aside from taking cases for direct service. We also have an arts legal line once per quarter, and you'll see the dates there. And you can do those remotely, where essentially an artist will call in and speak to our receptionist, and our receptionist will get kind of a summary of the issue, and then distribute them among the attorneys based on specialty, and you get the question beforehand so you can do some research.